say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Hey, good morning, everyone. It's a damp, cloudy, wet day out here in Kingman, Arizona. About 65 degrees this morning. It's a little unseasonably cool. We're going to have high temperatures around 75, 80 degrees for a few days. I may have to dig out my long underwear. Got a few things going for us this morning. We'll get to take care of some business first. Give a shout out to some of our sponsors and good friends and give you some updates from that as well. Uranus Fudge Company and General Store, of course, that is the quintessential road trip attraction along Route 66 for a new generation. And as many of you know, Louis Keene's been a bit under the weather, but I talked to him the other day or got a message from him. He is on the road to recovery, and that's a good thing. You really owe it to yourself to make a stop there at Uranus Fudge Company and General Store, where near St. Robert, Missouri, where juvenile humor reigns supreme. And, well, we give a shout out, of course, while we're in Missouri. Well, if you're that close, you might as well make a stop at the Wagon Wheel Motel there in Cuba. It is not only the oldest continuously operated motel on Route 66, it is a true little gem. Connie Eccles is a wonderful host there. And it's really, really, it's the quintessential little place. It's just wonderful. The Route 66 experience is really magnified at the Wagon Wheel. And speaking of time capsules, of course, we have the Roadrunner Lodge out in Tucumcari, New Mexico. Another one of my great places. If you get in there, stop and say hello to David Brenner. He's done a wonderful job of trying to make that a time capsule, 1964. And he does a great job, but gives us all the amenities that we expect today. And of course, well, Tucumcari is more than just a stop on the way too. So we're hoping the game plan today is to have Steve Roth join us, the senior marketing manager at Quarto Publishing. We're waiting for Steve here this morning. We'll see how that plays out because we have been having a bit of weather and once again some other issues. Publishing, writing. You know, it's always in a state of flux and change, and a lot of questions, a lot of misunderstandings about writing, how it works, how you make a living writing. Still trying to figure that one out, but I digress. So if you got any questions, like say, hopefully Steve will be with us just momentarily, and we'll see what happens here. Meanwhile, if you have any questions or things of that nature, please let us know. And let's see. I've been writing for dealing with Steve for quite a few years. I've written for several different publishers over the years. Questions that I've received about this program. Let me see if I can fill those in while we're I've written quite a few books, different publishers, and it comes out the same. One of the problems is authors sometimes have a tendency to forget that they have a part in the marketing. And one of their best friends is the marketing manager. To coordinate with them is key to getting your books off the ground. It's kind of disturbing. You'll find as you dig into writing that it's competitive. unless you're Stephen King, books don't sell as well as you'd think they do. And, well, that can be a rude awakening for a lot of folks sometimes when they first get into the business. And story of book signings. My gosh, I have had some... One second here. I've had some interesting book over the years. I've had some very interesting book signings all over the country. Book signings have opened a lot of doors for me. Or one of the great book signings I've done was at Auto Books Aero Books in Burbank, California. Really great little store, been there since about 1953. And that's where I had an encounter with Jay Leno. That's been an ongoing situation. That's a story I've shared several times, and we'll share it again sometime. I've teased Jay once or twice that I need to get him on this program. The challenge with marketing books, and you'll find it's a, how to put it, it's an idiosyncratic, it's an odd thing. Let's just put it right out there. Here's an example. Hastings Bookstore in Kingman, Arizona. I signed some books there. We had a book signing when Ghost Towns of the Southwest came out. And I was really shocked. They sold out of books. Usually when I do a book signing, I'll sell 5, 10, maybe 15, but they sold out of books. And since I live nearby, I explained to them, why don't you go ahead and sell the books, take orders, and then... I says, you know, you can go ahead and take orders, and when the books come in, you call me. I'll stop in and sign the books, and we can continue selling books and make this thing go. Well, you imagine my surprise with when I stopped at the bookstore and the books had come in, and I went to sign them, and they had the assistant manager, and she told me, she says, we'll have to get a hold of the manager. We just can't have random people here defacing books. Mr. Steve, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, Jim, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
Oh, we sure can. Sorry for the problems. Isn't technology grand?
Oh, it's always a grand old time, right?
You know, it seems like after the Zoom and after the apocalypse, we'd be easier with this, but I have such trouble. I joke only half-heartedly that I'm modern Amish, and I struggle with this stuff constantly. And the good news is, with all this technology, we don't have to look for an excuse to drink.
No, that's true. We do not.
You know, I get lots of questions. There's a lot of interest about and misunderstanding about what an author's role is in marketing books. And we were just talking about that. Your best friend at a real publisher is going to be your marketing manager. They're going to be key. They're going to be key. And you and I have worked on a few of these projects now.
We have. I was thinking today, this morning, before we got a little while ago, that I started with Quarto. They weren't even called Quarto then, back in 2011. You were one of the very first authors I ever spoke with, maybe the first author I spoke with, back when you were doing your great Route 66 books for Voyager, and you know, many evolutions of the company later, we're still talking. And I've always loved working with you, always loved your books. You know, kind of getting back to what you're saying, the author's role is was big then, and is more paramount, is even bigger than it was back then, and continues to be as far as marketing a book.
Gosh, I didn't realize that you and I had been frustrating each other that long.
I can remember too. I remember several years ago, you and I talking, and I said, you know, I think these books, the subjects of these books and these chapters alone would make great podcast episodes. And I think you kind of took that ball and ran with it.
Well, the idea behind Jim Hinckley's America in general is sharing America's story and providing inspiration by telling people where to go. And when it comes to writing, I tell people to go to their marketing manager. I've worked with, you know, several different publishers. We've had some great adventures. Gosh, with Dennis Pernue and I go back even further.
Sure.
And when I was speaking recently at a community college about writing, and I'm not known for being politically correct. People asked what was one of the prerequisites to be relatively successful. And I said S&M, and I wasn't talking about Spaniards and Mexicans. You have to be willing to take it on the chin. You have to roll the punches, and you have to learn. You have to be, learn flexibility, because the markets change, things change, and recognizing opportunity.
Exactly. I mean, I guess, you know, getting back to kind of what you were talking about marketing. I mean, long before I was in the book business, and this was changing when I first started in 2011, used to be an author would hand in the manuscript and say, okay, well, that's kind of it. What do I do? You know, send me on a book tour. Or do I get on TV? I do all, you know, all these things. And that's not how it works anymore. I mean, marketing is all, you know, essentially marketing is creating demand, right? And that as much, almost as much comes from the author as my efforts outside of what you do. You know, I mean, it really gets started. You're the one who's constantly, you know, an author almost has to create a brand, as we've seen with so many other authors, both fiction and nonfiction, and continue to, you know, provide reasons and provide neat things and give insight to, you know, the subject they're writing about, especially in the nonfiction world, right? So, I mean, before a book's publication, you know, the tools you have, like it's social media and this podcast and things, I mean, continue to get the word out. It's not about, you know, hitting people over the head with buy my book. It's really about, hey, if you're looking for information about Route 66, I'm your guy. And if they find it on your website and find they got a book, well, you know, whatever steps it takes to get there, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it's been an interesting journey. When I first started writing books, I'd already been writing magazine articles for 10 years. But I got to admit, I came into this thing ignorant of my role in marketing of books. And that was compounded by how rapidly things were changing in the first part of this century. And a lot of opportunities were missed, but I learned a lot along the way.
Well, refresh my memory here. You started doing transportation books, right? Before the Route 66 books, you were writing, I think, for motor books, and then you mentioned magazine articles.
Yeah, my two areas of expertise were travel, the Southwest Route 66, but most of my work has been prior to that, and still to this day I do a lot on the evolution of the American auto industry from 1885 to roughly 1945. And the dramatic societal evolution during that period resulted. And I was associate editor for Cars and Parts for a while until they went out of business, and you know, things of that nature. And I found that they intersected, Steve. You know, like for example, Edsel Ford. And a lot of people don't realize that Edsel is more than a car that looked like a Buick sucking a lemon. It was Henry Ford's son. And he made a trip west in 1915 along the National Old Trails Road, which in the Southwest, that became Route 66 in 1926. So there was kind of an overlap
Sure.
on the two subjects.
Sure, no doubt. And I mean, certainly it's one that you could forever explore too, right? Because it's still changing all the time. And Lord knows you taught me an awful lot about Route 66.
Well, you know, it's really an interesting animal, to say the very least. And now with the Route 66 centennial approaching, I really suppose that you're going to get inundated with media requests and things of that nature, looking for Route 66 titles.
Well, certainly, if nothing else, and if I do my job right, you'll get inundated with requests too, because, you know, as we know, for big centennials, anniversaries, big events, things like that. You know, media, especially media that's stretched so thin that does not have anywhere near the amount of, say, reporters and media outlets, they're looking for quick information on something that's topical. They're looking for somebody to come in and you know, provide that information, be a guest, something they can package, so to speak, and turn around quickly, whether it's on a radio show, a podcast, or an article. I get hit up all the time for all sorts of different subjects for excerpt material. They just want that content, you know, so, because there's not, you know, there a journalist, whereas a newspaper might have had three travel writers one time, maybe now they have one. They maybe rely on a freelancer or a syndicated column. The one on staff, if they still have one, also does three other beats, right? Does local, does breaking news, does something else. So it's like, wow, I got to cover the 366 centennial. Well, here's 10 questions, Q&A with Jim Hinckley, author of These Route 66. So hopefully I have a lot of opportunities for you.
Well, you have. You know, you've got me set up with great programs like Rudy Max's Travel World and others. One of the problems that first time, and I was shocked by it, still have trouble, is the, shall we say, the low return on investment for your writing endeavors. If you're expecting to make a living just on royalties, boy, you've either got to have very low overhead or you've got to, it's a harsh reality.
That's endemic to the arts in general, right? I mean, I can tell
yes.
you in my previous career, 25 years or so in the music business, I mean, you had to have a huge hit record or like with an author, a huge hit book to really make a lot from royalties. It was really about, you know, trying to find all these other ancillary avenues.
Yeah.
In your case, if you can sell, you know, do events and sell books right out of the trunk of your car, well, you're, you know, hopefully pocketing a 50% margin there versus a small royalty rate at whatever bookstores, you know, at whatever, you know, twice yearly royalty report you get showing, you know, I would imagine I don't see these royalty reports, but I do a look at sales every now and then. And you know, I mean, when I first started, there was Borders Books and Music. There was other chains. And the book business itself, physical retail is healthy once again. It's still growing. Problem is there's a million different books released every year. There's just not that much shelf space. So it's incumbent upon you authors to find those avenues and get aggressive and find different places to sell, whether it's a gift shop, you know, an event, a car show, whatever it might be.
I was really shocked when I first started writing, probably 2003, 4, somewhere in there. I was reading an industry survey. Overwhelming percentage of books published annually sell less than 1,000 copies a year.
Yeah,
and,
that's all right.
Yeah, and it's I was really shocked by that. But, you know, the writing, if it's done right and you're working with your marketing manager, it'll open a lot of doors where you can make a buck to support the writing habit.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's all those other things that can help your income stream. So when you're spending those hours, hours and hours researching and writing a book, you're still able to eat, right?
You know, I joke about that often when people ask me, what is the definition of a successful author? I tell them it's a successful author. The only thing you do is write, and you can still afford to eat every second day. How do you know, ebooks have really changed things pretty dramatically. Would you agree with that? Or
I mean, for us, and you know, the books that we published, I mean, you know, heavily illustrated books on all sorts of different subjects. I mean, ebooks have grown to become a big part of our business. But when I say big, it's still in the single digits, right? But that's more than it was, say, 3, 4, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's no danger of, at least in our business, for nonfiction of ebooks taking over physical books. You just can't replace, you know, on a Kindle or on a screen, a nice, beautifully shot hardcover book with a lot of graphics dropping out at you. So, I mean, maybe I sound like a Luddite, but so far we haven't necessarily seen that yet. And like I mentioned, we're still seeing growth at physical retail, particularly indie bookstores bounce back.
I haven't heard the term Luddite in a long time. That's that. Now we're getting somewhere. Well, for me, the Kindle, and there again, I'm an old-fashioned fella. A Luddite probably works for me too, but a Kindle just seems unnatural when you're in the bathroom or the outhouse. It just doesn't do it. You got to have something to read.
Oh no, absolutely. And you know, I had this conversation recently with someone, and we were talking about ebooks, and they said, you know, how many ebooks do you have? I said, I've never read an ebook in my life. They're like, what are you talking about? I said, one, I still love physical books. I'd rather have a book hitting my forehead as I fall asleep at night versus a Kindle, you know, in the middle of reading. But the other thing is, I'm on my screen, whether it's a phone or it's at my desk all damn day, and yeah. I'm reading the news, or I'm at the gym and I'm on the bike and I'm looking at reading something. And if I can cut away from that any given time and actually consume something else, reading wise, I'd rather do that. So
yes, Nolan Stoltz is with us this morning from South Carolina. He's written a few books. He's a musician by trade, music teacher, among a few other little attributes. And he said that he's found a royalty rate of 8 to 10% of wholesale, 6% of list is common for academic publishers. He asked if that's typical for commercial publishers as well. Any idea?
You know, it's definitely, I mean, I don't work in royalties. There's a lot of stuff I like to say. I don't like to see the sausage being made reviewed, I should say. But it is, from what I've always seen, and I think it differs for authors, and we've got, you know, hundreds of titles. I mean, I know it's under 10%, so that's probably not too far away from there. So
yeah, it's your job. It's got to be interesting because you interact with some of these media personalities. Does this include television? I've been asked that as well. Do you get a lot of requests for interviews from television programs?
That can be the holy grail. That's really tough. You know, I'm constantly trying to increase my increase kind of my database there. Getting onto the Jimmy Kimmel of the world and Good Morning America, CBS Sunday Morning is really, really tough. But as far as, you know, that local program, let's say Good Morning Houston or something like that, we got a book that's pretty topical. I mean, a lot of those tend to be pretty light. So we got a book about a movie or something, or I don't deal with our cookbooks, but I know our cookbook publicist, especially if there's a hot trend in cooking or baking, particularly out of the pandemic where people were home so often and still cooking and stuff. You know, we got a lot of TV appearances out of that. So it tends to be a bit more trend oriented, if you will.
Well, sometimes, you know, it's just the luck. I have found that a lot of this is just blind. I feel like a blind man in the dark with a flashlight sometimes. The stuff that I stumble into, the way I ended up with an interview with Jay Leno at his garage. He was doing a book club at that time for Jay Leno's garage. I was doing a book signing in Burbank.
Oh, and sure.
Auto Books, Arrow Books.
Right on.
And it was just a quirky thing. And I was also writing at that time for Still with Cars and Parts. And it was kind of a quirky thing. I did some quick research. They asked me to do an article on a museum there and on the Doble steam car. I found out that Jay Leno had just bought a Doble. And I found out, just as a quirk of fate, I was doing a book signing, and I found out that Jay Leno was a regular on Saturday mornings at this bookstore. And, I thought that, boy, I tell you, Jay just bought a Doble. I'm going to have – this is going to be something else. And he never showed up.
Oh,
so
no.
I signed a magazine, and a Cars and Parts said, I'd hope to talk to you about your Doble. And when I got home 3 days later, there was a message on the answering machine from Jay Leno, and he'd showed up 20 minutes after I left. So we spent about 9 months going back and forth, but I ended up having an interview in his garage for the Big Book of Car Culture, actually. And, that's how that whole situation started. So sometimes it's just the luck of the draw, who you can meet and stumble into.
Yeah, it sounds like a cliche, but luck really does have a lot to do with it. Serendipitously kind of, you know, chance encounters, whatever it might be. Just, I guess, being in the right place in the right time, making yourself open for opportunities.
Aside from working close with your marketing manager, what other ideas would you suggest for, especially a newbie, somebody that's really getting started with this? What would be your suggestions?
As far as
marketing, trying to sell books in general.
Sure. I mean, well, for starters, to, you know, more than ever before, it's so incumbent on the author to help get that word out and so to grow that network. I mean, it's rare that I have an author now that doesn't have some sort of quote unquote, and I hate using buzzwords, but that's all I really got. You know, some sort of platform, some sort of place to let people know that about what they do. And I think it's like that in a lot of other industries as well. I mean, listen, if you're a salesperson or something, and or, you know, some in some sort of other profession like that, and you're not on LinkedIn, it's probably to your detriment, right? I mean, you know, so there's always different platforms, get a little bit confusing, but find kind of a couple that really work for you. And this being one of them, I see how I've seen this podcast grow and see the thousands of listens you have every month. And I mean, this is where you're helping to get the word out. And even if you're not talking about your book every, you know, every episode, and, or, you know, again, it's not about hitting people over the head so much, but it's about giving people a place to find you so they can identify, you know, with your work, where they can, you know, learn more about you, really be open to those sorts of opportunities, and stay active with it. I mean, it's, you know, if you were to all of a sudden, just because of whatever, I mean, granted, you got major life challenges, I understand if all of a sudden you can't put out an episode each week or keep posting or putting out videos on YouTube, whatever it might be. But I've seen authors disappear for 4 or 5 months from social media for different reasons, or just really lag behind on stuff. And then it's almost like starting from scratch again. So I think you need to be really consistent, keep coming up with good content, and just look for those opportunities. I mean, you're really the expert on what you're writing about, right? So you're the one who is cognizant and knowing what's happening on the ground and knowing what's going on. I mean, for instance, you've always amazed me how you found these amazing, you know, I would never have known, with the exception of, you know, through you, what a large Route 66 audience there is in Europe, right? I mean, you discovered that, made that work to your benefit, and sold books through it and got the word out about who you are and what you do in your book. So, I mean, that, you know, I guess overall, stay aggressive, keep looking for opportunities, you know, really be open to different ideas.
Well, I tried to, with this program, the idea behind this, the reason I started this Jim Hinckley's America was, one of the goals was to create a brand and sell books, but it was also to share the wealth, share the knowledge, and to give a promotional platform to people who were getting started or needed help marketing and building basically a cooperative network of partnerships. I think that was part of it. The social media, the podcast, Facebook, YouTube, on one hand, it's never been easier to create a brand and market yourself. If you can figure it out, and I still am, like I say, I'm still trying to figure out this technology. The problem is you've got to be flexible. I don't know if you were aware of this. I built up Jim Hinckley's America on Facebook, had over almost 8,000 followers. And for no reason, I was locked out from Facebook. I've never been able to resolve it, never been able to get an answer. It's been over a year.
Yeah, I do remember this because you and I were talking about this a year ago, and I felt powerless. I felt helpless that I couldn't help you resolve this any more than, you know, than I could, because it just was a damn mystery to me. And around that time, I heard that from a couple different people that were having login informations, both personally and professionally, where there was some sort of, I don't know what it was, but, you know, you see things like two-factor authentication, all this other stuff. But I mean, it broke my heart that you had to go through that, because I saw you building this, you know, saw that growth you had at Facebook. And so it was almost like starting over again.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, but it's frustrating, and it really hit me pretty hard, especially just coming bouncing back from COVID. And you, there again, you got to have, I think, be multifaceted, and it is it's a huge time sink. But developing your own website, things that you have more control over, and not being just dependent on social media is pretty important.
Right. You know, you mentioned networking and stuff, and I've seen what you do with these episodes here, and that's so important. I mean, when you have these people from, different writers and different authors and people from museums and things like that, I mean, you know, these are all people that are, it's such a cooperative effort, right? They're appreciative of you helping them to spread the word on what they're doing, and they're doing the same for you. And networking, that's the key. That's the key right there. And you've really built this up. I mean, I love what you've done with this, you know, not just the sponsors, which are fantastic, but also just the array of people you've had on here that are all related to Route 66 and travel and history and things like that. I mean, you know, I would never have known that, you know, Major League Baseball played in Kingman, Arizona. You know what I mean? But you got that guy, Ron Clements, you know, back when was that, July or June? You know, that's fantastic. And I'm assuming that guy was very appreciative, and whatever, you know, he's got going on, he's hopefully, you know, promoting his appearance on your podcast. And that's that networking kind of just expands exponentially.
Well, we've got quite a few, even this morning's an example. And I really like say it's, I try not to make this a gym show. The idea is, of course, I am promoting myself, but the idea is to give other people some ideas, insight, and things. We've got some great people here this morning. Leanne's with us. She manages a store up in Oatman, Arizona. I signed books up there, Jackass Junction. And Maggie May's with us this morning from East Lansing with the Ransom E. Olds Museum. And Greg Hassman is quite a journalist and photographer out of Albuquerque that's looking to expand what he's doing. And then I mentioned Nolan, who's with us today. And hopefully we've given them all some great ideas and insights and a little bit of a boost, because there's some great talents here, some tremendous talents. I, for one, have been very appreciative of having you in my corner on things. And just like when I approached you recently on this speakers bureau that turned out it didn't work. It was a dead end alley, but you found out the answers a lot quicker than I would have.
Well, you know what? I mean, that's the thing. That was a learning experience to me, because I know what a speakers bureau does. I didn't know, the huge company that distributes our books and has their own imprint actually has one, you know? So I turned that over to a couple other people and kind of got me the details on that pretty quickly. I was like, okay, wow, this is, so thank you. You got me educated.
Well, like I say, it's a team effort. And I'd like to encourage anybody that's, you know, getting into writing to develop that relationship with the marketing department. Any publisher worth their salt has some sort of a marketing department. They may have cut the staff in other places and overburdened people, but that hand in glove partnership is really a key component to this.
Well, again, I mean, not to keep patting you on the back here, but I mean, it really does. It really starts with the author more than before. I mean, you know, if you're self-published, you're all of that. You have to do all that stuff, right? I mean, if you've got, but yet a self-published author, you know, we spend thousands of dollars a year subscribing to a media database, a couple different ones, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, there's still something to be said about having an actual imprint behind you, and because you can't do it all on your own, you know? I mean, you definitely have to be a part of it, and develop your, again, I'm going to say brand and platform again, but develop yourself out there to help get the word out. But, you know, if you can have a bit more behind that, I think hopefully it's going to be to your benefit, especially for, you know, selling more books.
Self-publishing, like with anything, it has its advantages. It has its merits. Out of curiosity, I did try self-publishing a small book on the Kingman area when Amazon was using a CreateSpace, I believe it was at that time. Sure. And it's not just you limit yourself on marketing. But it's also, you got to take into account, you've got to do your own editing, proofreading, layout.
Right.
And the margin of profit's already pretty tight. So how much time do you want to put into this? I suppose self-publishing, if you've already built a brand for yourself and you have an outlet, of course, that would be advantageous. But it does, like you said, it really helps, because the pool resource marketing is crucial. And I don't have the funds to invest in what you do for reaching out to this media companies and promotion. So that
it's also a time factor too. I mean, where's your time best spent? I mean, for goodness sake, you gotta have a life, you know? I mean, yeah. outside of knocking yourself out to edit, write, you know, do all the things that you have to do before a book's even published.
Yeah. Steve, I for one, am really grateful for this. Is Corto looking to any particular subjects that are really doing well right now?
You know, at the moment for us, I mean, separately from the adult world, kids books still tend to do really well. I mean, you know, we've had a growing kids division that really took off during the pandemic. I think we were all pretty surprised. I mean, frankly, I wasn't sure if, you know, we had to do some things economically and retrench the beginning days of the pandemic, but we were all very surprised to see book sales because people were home, you know, and so people were you know, not just kids, but all books. I mean, we saw a lot of growth because people were looking for things to take their mind off of things and to kind of, when you couldn't necessarily travel or go to places you wanted to go to learn more about. So kids books have done really well. Cookbooks, depending on, you know, there's different trends within cooking that tend to do really well. We've been doing really good with pet books, dog books in particular. From my standpoint, I mean, you know, frankly, we don't do as many travel books as I think either of us would like, you know, but there's just only so much bandwidth you have in publishing. But we've done well with, you know, your books continue to sell well for us. I was going to say as well, at least of what I work on, we've done some big illustrated histories of like huge rock and roll artists. So we did a book early in the year on Alice Cooper, which did fantastic, called Alice at 75. Believe it or not, Alice Cooper is 75 years old. We did one on Elton John and David Bowie, kind of this unique kind of biographical format where their stories are told in 75, or in the case of, like, say, the band Kiss coming out in October. They're 50 years old, so 50 kind of moments, if you will. So it's a different way to do a biography. So those have done really well. You know, we do well on the regardless of the subject matter, but if there's a really big anniversary, so I'm sure, hopefully you're talking to Dennis about some things for 2026 for the Route 66 centennial. You know, for us in particular with motor books, you know, big Porsche anniversaries, right? The Porsche 356 had an anniversary, right? Porsche as a mark has an anniversary, you know, as a mark, is 75 years. So when we're able to kind of tap into something and create a really compelling and a very, you know, a great book that tells the whole history of something, and we can tie it into a big anniversary, that tends to, those are sorts of things that kind of are evergreen. So that's not so much a trend base, but so much as what's happening with a particular, you know, mark or individual or something.
Nolan, I hope that what Steve just mentioned about the books on music, I hope that inspired you instead of depressed you. As far as cooking books being popular, I'm really kind of surprised, because there's so many cooking shows. There's so many websites and YouTube channels dedicated to cooking. I'm really surprised. Dog books, that surprised me too. And I hope there's not a correlation about people interested in dogs and cooking books, cookbooks, but that's another one for you. Anniversaries, there's so many of them that I'm surprised that have been overlooked. I think, if I remember right, 2024 should be 110 years of Chevrolet, 100 years of Chrysler should be in 2024, if I remember right, or 25. So there's some pretty big anniversaries coming up here. The centennial of 66 is going to be intriguing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, just thinking ahead a little bit, I mean, I could probably start sketching a marketing plan. I can have a conversation. It's a bit in advance on that as far as, but what we want to do, but you know, I'll want to know what you're doing around that every month of the year and how we can maximize that. I'm sure you're going to have a very, very busy year to, you know, not only just with the podcast, but with probably speaking engagements and other things going on as well, because that's only going to come around once.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to, the challenge is going to be make it profitable enough to do a lot of these things, but it's shaping up that I'll probably be busier than a one-legged man in a behind kicking contest. Greg is our, I don't know if anybody saw this, Greg's comment. We were talking about cookbooks and dogs. He said that could be rough, R-U-F-F. Ah, oh, Greg.
Thank you, you've been a great crowd.
Yes, Greg is our pun master. He's quite a talent. Steve, I want to thank you for taking time from your Sunday to do this morning, because I get so many questions about these things, and I hope this has answered a few questions, inspired folks. And the thing that to do is, like, say, you've got to have that partnership, and like, say, with your marketing manager. And the other one is flexibility and thinking outside the box. When they were doing Cuba Fest in Cuba, Missouri, a very small town in the Missouri Ozarks, I would go every year there and I would bring books. And for some reason, Steve, I never sold any place as many books as I did there. Every time I went, I would sell two or more cases of books. And then I'll show up at a major event in Houston, Texas, or Los Angeles, a book fair, and I'll sell six books for the day. It's,
you know, I think that speaks to something, though, right? I mean, I think it can be so much in marketing about finding that right niche. So when you're at a book fair, you got all that competition for the people's dollar, right? When you're out there specific to Cuba, and you've got something that's so specific to what people are enjoying right then, right there, right? It's instant gratification. They're not going to, you know, I always like to say, there's no better time than the present, right? As far as getting a book. So why wait to get to your bookstore, or order it online when you can get it right there from the author and talk about the book as well?
I always try to encourage when I travel, something I've learned too. I try to support the small bookstores as much as I can. And something I learned early is developing these relationships with these bookstores when I travel. I always call ahead, make sure they've got some books in the store, and I always offer to stop and sign books. If they want to build something around it, that's fine. But if nothing else, they can market that they have signed copies of the books in the store that way. Sure. And there is a self-serving reason for doing that. And that is, if the books are defaced with a signature, they can't return them to the publisher.
Exactly.
So they have to sell them.
You know, we should mention, well, maybe you've mentioned this before, but a lot of people don't know this. There's a terrific website that is kind of the independent bookstore website. It's called bookshop.org. And when if you're inclined to buy from them, and not to favor any one particular retailer at all, because they all have their own benefits, but bookshop.org, they bounce back money from their online sales to local bookstores, no matter where you're at. And with it, so it is a sizable amount of money in the 4 or 5 years that they've been in business. It's a pretty neat little thing. It's basically your connection to independent retail, no matter where you are. So again, not to favor any one retailer, but it's become kind of the back end for independent bookstores who, you know, might not be able to keep a huge website up and running. It's pretty neat. They've raised more than $27 million for local bookstores.
I will put that up on my website.
Your books are there.
I will put that up on my, get that up on a website, a blog post, and I'll also get it up on social media, see if we can get the word out on that. Steve, I want to thank you for everything you've done over the years for me personally. And I want to thank you for taking time to do this morning. And anybody have any questions for Steve before we button this thing up? One of the great things about doing this, even though we had a little bit of initial trouble in the beginning, I've got flexibility on the time schedule. That's another reason to do your own programs.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. It's always, you know how much I love talking to you, Jim, anytime, even if we're just going to shoot some ideas around. And I always like to say, too, I don't have any monopoly on ideas. I mean, I'll try anything and pursue anything if it means helping to sell more books. So helping the cause there.
Well, you mentioned the centennial. I won't let the cat out of the bag because there's not a lot to let out of the bag. The cat's pretty thin right now. But I have been talking with Dennis. We've got an idea cooking on the back burner about a Route 66 centennial project. And
I can only guess what that might be about.
Yeah, well.
So I'll have to tune in with Dennis soon, and we'll have to get together here and shoot some more ideas around. So
the challenge when you get into doing books on things like Route 66, the challenge is not to rehash things, because so much has been written in the last 10 years on that highway. Coming up with new information is always a challenge. And I need to give a plug out here to Nolan Stoltz, by the way. He puts up some incredible videos and research on his Patreon page. And Nolan, I've talked to Nolan quite a few times personally and online. Speaking of obscure things and where he comes up with, he's done traveled Route 66 numerous times and came up, researched the most obscure places I've never heard of. Places I joke a lot about this, Nolan, but Mud College, Oklahoma. These little towns that are literally gone, and they never amounted much more to a general store, a post office, and gas station. But these were Route 66 related communities. And he has delved deep into that history. And I want to thank you, Nolan, because that's a source of information and inspiration. Folks, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. And we'll do this again next week. Next week, we're going to be talking to Dora Maroney. She is the owner of Texas Ivy Antiques in Amarillo. And she's with the Texas Route 66 Association. And lots of neat things happening in Amarillo with Route 66. And they've got their big motor tour coming up in Texas, Route 66 motor tour, pretty quick. And Dora is pretty interesting. I think you're going to find this quite fascinating. Her and her husband have used to do a lot of cross-country bicycling. And she's involved with a lot of the renovation going on the original Route 66 alignment in Amarillo on 6th Street. And then the week after that, we're going to talk to Cheryl Eicher-Jett. She is also an author and a screenwriter. And she was the founder of the annual Miles of Possibility Conference. And the only conference that is dedicated to the business of Route 66. And since we're talking about that, I might as well give this shout out too. I'm very honored to be one of the keynote speakers this year at the Miles of Possibility Conference. And we'll be talking about, in the beginning, the dawn of the Great American Road Trip. It's my program for the Miles of Possibility Conference this year. My friends, thank you. And we'll send this off with a little bit of music from Joe and Woody and boys, the Road Crew, roadcrew66.com. Great road trip inspiration.
Say hello to a new friend.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for everybody who joined us today. Thanks, Steve.
Take a two-lane trip.
Thank you, Jim. Take care.
Into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
And if you find yourself out in Kingman, you wanted something fun to do, Check out Kingman.Tours. It's a narrated historic district walking tour I've been helping develop with Kingman Main Street. Been a lot of fun. Vaya con Dios, mi amigos. Adios.